Hello and welcome to the new year. We wish you all a very happy and prosperous 2008. This is the first Archaeology News Weekly of that year, and I am, as ever, David Connolly. So on behalf of Stone Pages, myself and Dave Horrocks, Happy New Year. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A research group is studying chocolate use from ancient pottery in Mesoamerica. The remains of a 2,500-year-old civilization are unveiled in Russia. Ancient petroglyphs in Utah, can they be a benefit to development? We have news on the Scandinavians inventing ice skating around 3000 BCE, and we report on another perfect solstice watch at Newgrange in Ireland. And finally, an ancient stone circle is found in Skåne in Sweden. Now, very apt for this festive time, Kennesaw State University professor Terry Powis led a research group that determined man's first use of chocolate around 1900 BCE, about 700 years earlier than expected. Almost 4,000 years ago, residents of hot and humid Central America probably served chocolate, which comes from the beans of the cacao tree, as a cold beverage with different flavors. Powis, an assistant professor of anthropology, spent 3 weeks in Chiapas, Mexico labs gathering samples from ceramic jars and bowls that date from 1900 BCE to 1500 BCE. The research from Powis's team appeared in the December edition of Antiquity. Michael Coe, a retired Yale University professor of anthropology and co-author of the journal article, said the findings show that chocolate has been used far longer than researchers would have guessed a decade ago. The study means that the Mokaya, the earliest sedentary villagers of Mesoamerica, probably drank some form of cold liquid chocolate from elaborate bowls and jars. Mmm, tasty. Thank you very much, Mokaya people. Archaeologists have discovered the remains of a 2,500-year-old advanced civilization at the bottom of Lake Izyk-Kul in the Kyrgyz Mountains in Russia. The team consisted of Kyrgyz archaeologists led by Vladimir Poshkika, vice president of the Kyrgyz Academy of Sciences, and other Russian colleagues, including Svetlana Lukashova. The expedition resulted in sensational finds, including the discovery of major settlements currently deep underwater. The data and artifacts obtained, which are currently under study just now, apply the final touches to many years of exploration in the lake made by seven previous expeditions. The discovery consisted of huge walls stretching for 500 metres and traces of a large city with an area of several square kilometres. Other findings included Scythian burial mounds eroded by waves over the centuries and numerous well-preserved artifacts such as bronze battle axes, arrowheads, daggers, casting moulds, and even a faceted gold bar, which was a monetary unit of the time. Some artifacts are in fact so stunning that they could point towards a very advanced civilization. For example, a 2,500-year-old ritual bronze cauldron that was found on the bottom of the lake was of such excellent quality that the welds can only be obtained today by metalworking within an inert gas. Also, of superb workmanship are bronze mirrors, festive horse harnesses, and many other objects. Articles identified as the world's oldest extant coinage were also found underwater. Gold wire rings were used as small change, and the large hexahedral gold bar was obviously the larger denomination. Side by side with the settlements are remnants of ritual complexes, dwellings and household outbuildings. As a blend of nomadic and settled life, it either gradually evolved into something different or, more likely, it was destroyed by one of many local floods, which left it now beneath the waves. Massive burnt umber boulders sit within a neighbourhood park that kids just can't stop from clambering over, sometimes even attempting to scratch their own marks over the Anasazi petroglyphs before the adults get them off. Archaeologists typically warn against even smudging natural skin oils onto the chiseled drawings or the rock's natural mineral glaze. The state's fastest-growing cities are eating up millennium-old rock art. Dorina Martineau, cultural resource director of the Patui Indian Tribe of Utah, comments that this is our past and our library. Home builders long have surrounded or even dynamited the desert boulders that tell of the old tales. Martineau's late father photographed and interpreted countless rocks before two Washington County dams flooded the area. Now housing developers are capitalizing on and marketing petroglyph parks that give subdivisions a distinction, but inevitably suck some of the soul out of these sacred landscapes. Anasazi and Fremont Indian petroglyphs and pigment-brushed pictographs are so common across northern Utah's sage-studded hills that Utah State archaeologist Kevin Jones says there's no good way of knowing just how many have been destroyed or chipped off by living room collectors during the state's continuing population boom. Nevertheless, Jones is especially excited about a Kanab developer's plans, which incorporate not just rock art but an excavated pit house, clay pots and other relics from more than 1,000 years of Anasazi occupation. Developer Milo McCowan has directed archaeologists to find the sites for roads and homes that would least disturb the number of sites, and ultimately plans to dedicate a museum exhibiting the culture that abruptly vanished from the state around 1200 CE. He looks at it as a real amenity that's not many places have. Whether or not that will sell him more houses, that's still to be seen. But I have to say, as far as I'm concerned, this is the developer who looks at the whole picture. So, well done that, ma'am. Archaeological evidence suggests that the first skates made of animal bones date back to 3000 BCE, helping people travel more widely during frozen winters in Finland, marking the start of the evolution of more sophisticated skates. Constructed of trimmed horse or cow bones and pierced at one end and strapped to the foot with leather thongs, they were not powered by the classic skating motion but used in tandem with the long stick, skaters straddling the stick and pulling themselves along. Oh, that sounds a bit uncomfortable. But Dr. Federico Formenti and Professor Alberto Minetti of University of Oxford lay out the evidence supporting the idea that the birth of ice skating took place in southern Finland, where the number of lakes within a given area is the highest in the world. In central and northern Europe, 5,000 years ago, people struggled to survive the severe winter conditions, and it seems unlikely that ice skating developed as a hobby. To test their theories, the scientists made ice skates model on 23 ancient specimens in the British Museum and the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge. In experiments on an ice rink by the Alps, the team measured the energy consumption of 5 retired professionals while skating on bones, showing they were relatively slow, reaching only around 2.5 miles an hour. However, through mathematical models and computer simulations of 240 10-kilometer journeys, their research showed that in winter, the use of bone skates on frozen lakes would have limited the energy requirements of people by up to 10%. The energy saving was only 3% in Norway and 1% or less in Sweden, Germany and the Netherlands. The effects reflect the local geography of southern Finland, which has the highest concentration of lakes in a 100-square-kilometer area anywhere in the world. In order to better adapt to the severe conditions imposed by the long-lasting winters, Finnish populations could benefit more than others from developing this ingenious locomotion method. Other research by the team shows that energy cost of skating on ice decreased dramatically throughout history as bone gave way to iron and then to steel, with modern ice skating only using 25% of the effort associated with the use of bone skates. It still sounds like a lot of hard work to me, so my advice is to stay at home, open a bottle of whiskey and put on the TV. A clear, frosty morning ensured perfect conditions at Newgrange last Friday morning as the sun illuminated the chamber of the world-famous megalithic tomb on the 40th anniversary of the discovery of the phenomena. It was on the 21st of December 1967 that Professor Michael O'Kelly witnessed the sunlight creep through the roof box and light up the burial chamber of the 5,000-year-old tomb. Professor O'Kelly's 3 daughters were invited along to witness the illumination for themselves on the 40th anniversary of the moment their father stood in the chamber and witnessed the spectacle. It was an emotional and moving experience for them as they recalled their late father going to Newgrange 40 years ago, their late father going to Newgrange 40 years before, and the impact of his discovery on archaeology. To review the highlights of the winter solstice, log on to www.heritageireland.ie. Or, Victor Regis has also posted a 6-minute compilation on YouTube. You can also have a look at the Badger blog, which contains another video of the solstice at Maze Howe in Scotland. To find it, just go to Google, type in Badger blog, and you will find it in the post section. And finally, and this one's going to be a bit of fun for me, and I'd like to thank a couple of people in Norway for helping me out with some of the words. And this is a special thank you to the Brun family. So here we go. And I know they'll be listening, so no laughing, please. Ancient remains, including a 3,000-year-old stone circle, have been discovered near Vitmola on Österlen in the far south of Sweden. The site extends over 2 hectares and is older and bigger than the region's celebrated Alet stones. The site, presumed to date from the Bronze Age, is reported to be probably the largest stone circle in the whole of Northern Europe. The find was made by Bob G. Lynn, a private researcher and archaeoastronomer. He has named the stones the Heimdall stones after Woden's son Heimdall, who in the Edda of Norse mythology is described as the most radiant sun god in the world. The cult centre site is the shape of a gigantic sundial and includes a large phallus symbol pointing due north. Lind explains that the stone sundial shows the sunrise and sunset in connection with moments such as the summer solstice, autumnal equinox, and the winter solstice. Lind explained how he stumbled over the site while out walking with friends. He later confirmed his instincts when flying over the area to photograph the site, which is on land owned by the county council. Heimdall's stones was inspected by Thomas Rumberg of the Regional Heritage Board, who confirmed the site's distinct pattern. According to the Skånska Dagbladet, the find has yet to be officially reported to the National Heritage Board. The site has also been inspected by archaeologist Niels Axel Mörner, who described how he was taken aback with amazement. Bob G. Lind is to be congratulated, Mörner enthused. Bob G. Lind is reported to be something of a controversial figure and has had a long-running feud with the National Heritage Board over the history of Sweden's hitherto largest stone circle site, Ales Stones in Kvarnsberga, also on Österlen. Whew, I feel better for that. I think I might get 6 out of 10 for that. Well, it just leaves me to say thank you to the thousands of people who've been listening to the news over the past couple of years, and I look forward to doing many more shows. So can I remind people that new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library and guidance section, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And of course, you can find out more about us on our blogs, and you can just type either Badger blog or Past Horizons blog into Google and find out more about us there. And more can always be found, as ever, at Stone Pages. news.stonepages.com. Thanks so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll come back to us next week.